Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, thank you DJ Q for bringing us back from break. He's absolutely right, I am Jay Flemma, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network. So glad to have you all aboard. Jay's Plays is brought to you by KB's Best. It is the most delicious, the boldest, the spiciest, the most amazing hot sauce out there on the market. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours. When it says KB's, it's the best. All right, we had a great first two segments with Rand Morissette and Tom Doak talking about the Confidential Guide to Golf Courses and golf course architecture and design. We are now going to switch over to talking about the tour and talking about the year in review with one of the true greats, another great friend of golf, capital G, capital F, capital G, a grand dame of our profession in sports writing, Marino Parisenzo. Marino, welcome back to Jay's Place.
Wow. After that introduction, I don't know what to do next.
You know, I remember once when I was in law school, I had to introduce this old, old German professor, okay, for a lecture one day. And I said, okay, everybody, one of the most honorable and venerable professors, Peter Herzog. He gets up, okay, in his squeaky voice, and he goes, ah, Jay, thank you very much for that intro, but Jesus Christ, venerable, makes me sound like I'm almost dead. The place erupts in laughter, and from the back of the room, somebody, some heckler shouts out, what do you mean, almost?
Oh, that's awful. I'm glad you don't have anybody like that on here.
Oh, no, not much. Marino, 2016 was a sort of a year of change. In golf, you know, we saw the baton firmly passed from Tiger Woods to the next generation. So why don't you walk us through the year as you saw it, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the historic.
Well, the part of the year that continues to baffle me, and we're talking impressions here, Jay, quite apart from what you just mentioned, is the way people continue to worship Tiger Woods. I mean worship. He's a golfer, for God's sakes. And the year in golf that we had with all the great golfers, everybody kept wondering, when is Tiger going to come back? I understand that. It is a fascinating subject to me. And we saw the finish of it in the last couple of weeks with that phony baloney finish that he put on with a hero with his
Hero World Challenge.
Yeah, with his endorsement contract with the Indian motorcycle company, and I am just amazed by stuff like that. But anyway, to get back, yes, we had a terrific year in golf. You had your Dustin Johnson, Spieth falling off. I don't understand that. Jason Day backing up a bit, but all in all, an exciting and productive year, a lot of fun.
Now, I'm going to go against the grain a bit. You mentioned Dustin Johnson, and I do believe that, you know, he's going to win GWAA, Golfer Association of America, Player of the Year. I have decided I'm going to vote for Henrik Stenson.
Really? How come?
Well, first of all, Dustin won one major, Henrik also won one major. And Henrik won his major in historic fashion, okay? And in a fashion that had to warm the heart of every ardent golfer because it harkened back to the duel in the sun. We got a reprise almost 40 years to the day of the great duel in the sun between Nicklaus and Watson, only we got Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson, okay, 10 shots clear of their competition over one of the greatest venues in golf, Royal Troon. We follow that up with the phenomenal finish that Henrik put on. He almost won the Olympics. He came in second to Justin Rose. He had some other wins during the year, and he had a solid Ryder Cup. I know that Dustin Johnson might have, on paper, more wins. But I think Hemric overall, especially towards the end of the year, put on a performance that had greater historic importance and gave us more of a highlight reel, plus the first Olympics in 104 years. You know, I know it's like choosing the Indians over the Cubs or perhaps the Warriors over the Cavaliers, but I really was very impressed with what I saw and the way he carried himself. And I really fell in love with that final round of the Open Championship. I mean, that was the best major I've seen in a very long time.
What's left? I totally disagree. That's all.
Okay.
I saw Dustin Johnson win the U.S. Open on a horribly tough golf course with the sword of Damocles hanging over his head for something like 5, 6, 7 holes, not knowing where that penalty would fall. I saw him win against tougher competition, and so I vote for him. Never mind what I saw at Troon. Sorry. That was a wonderful thing that Stenson did, but of course we disagree, and that's where I stand.
Well, you know, you mentioned some great things, though, there. It was wonderful to see Oakmont. Oakmont is my favorite major championship venue. Yes, even more than Augusta. And you are probably the most knowledgeable of all of the golf writers. That's why you've written a book about Oakmont.
Well, this this is not about Oakmont. This is about Dustin Johnson winning with a penalty hanging over his head, not only surviving, but expanding his lead and winning dramatically. And then that final shot at the last hole, that 6-iron to the 18th green, a terribly difficult finishing hole. You talk about a sign-off, and he put it to what, 5 feet, 3 feet, something like that? That was incredible.
I agree. It was a clutch performance.
That's why I'm voting. I have voted for Dustin Johnson.
And you're absolutely right. It was a time capsule moment, and it was a great moment of redemption. You know, I just felt that the 63 to close the Open Championship, you know, was equally good. And, you know, again, we are distinguishing between a Chateaubriand and a double porterhouse, okay? They're both phenomenal. They both were great moments, and they were reasons why this was a phenomenal year in golf. Now, you also brought up the Masters, okay, which was riveting for a completely different reason. You know, do you rank the collapse of Jordan Spieth, you know, up there in the great collapses in golf history?
Oh, absolutely. Not the great collapses. No. It was quite a collapse. Not the great ones. No, nothing like Greg Norman, which was a complete house falling in. Nothing like that.
Or Sean Vandeveld.
Norman didn't swallow just his tongue. He swallowed everything. He turned himself inside out, the poor guy. You know, I don't understand Spieth, but this was a good illustration, by the way. People say, well, the guy that won played the best. And I'm of the opinion that many times, in order for somebody to win, somebody else has to play really lousy. And that was the case here. Yes, Willett played well, but if Jordan Spieth just holds his wits about him, it doesn't matter that he played well.
Willett found a green jacket on the ground that day. And granted, he picked up a foot.
Yeah. I hearken back to the explanation from Nick Faldo when he said, I would rather be remembered for shooting the 67 to win the Masters, but I'm afraid everybody's going to remember that Greg Norman, you know, he didn't use these words, but choked and blew it all. Well, yeah, that is exactly what happened. You know, Nick Faldo shoots a nice 67, but if Greg Norman plays halfway decently, it ain't going to matter. This was one of those cases at this Masters as well. Willett played very well, all credit to him, but if Spieth holds his wits, it ain't going to matter.
You know, it's funny, our dear friend Dan Jenkins said about that 1996 Masters, he said, Greg Norman did his imitation of the Titanic again, but he went down by the throat. The master of the one line.
A banquet comedian in Pittsburgh at the time that, I'm not going to duplicate his stuttering, but he was a genuine stutterer, and it made the joke all the more effective. It was cruel, but I'm afraid it was true. He said, you remember when Nick Faldo hugged Greg Norman after winning that Masters, and he said he wasn't hugging him, he was doing the Heimlich maneuver.
Heimlich maneuver.
That is dreadful. And I'm ashamed of even bringing it up. But it was a joke.
Now, there were a couple of other, you know, big, excellent moments, exciting moments, dramatic moments, okay? Probably the next largest was the Ryder Cup. I was absolutely riveted by both, not only McIlroy versus Patrick Reed on that Sunday, but also Garcia versus Mickelson. What a match the two of them put on.
Yes,
and it just goes to show who says a tie is boring. So
right.
Tell me about your experience watching the Ryder Cup and what your thoughts were
watching the Ryder Cup. I did predict this one. I figured that the Americans would finally win because they would forget about everything else. I'm tired, by the way, of people making this a national conflict. Europe versus the U.S. It's nothing of the sort. It's two teams against each other. And the captains don't mean anything except they choose who plays when. And that's all well and good. But if you think a captain in golf is the equivalent of a coach in football, you're not watching the right game. He sends them out, play your ass off, and, you know, just do the best you can. These guys are pro golfers. They're not intimidated by each other. They're beaten by a ball in a bad lie. They're beaten by a 6-foot putt that doesn't curve the way they think it's going to curve. That's what beats them. And the reason the Europeans won so much is they played better. It's really, really that simple. And the reason the U.S. won is not because of all the cheering or waving of the U.S. flag or anything like that. Golf cannot be played that way, except Seve Ballesteros could play the game hot. I think he was the only one, maybe Palmer. But golf isn't played that way. Golf is a cold, calculating game. You hit it, you find it, you hit it again, and you do hope for the best that the fates aren't against you. And this time, the Americans simply played better, and I figured they were going to, and they had the right captain for it. Davis is a laid-back kind of guy. He's a very fine guy. He made his selections. He told him to go play. Now we don't know what happened in the players' rooms, but I doubt very much that they brought in a bunch of cheerleaders to do any rah-rah stuff. I doubt that very much. I think pro golfers would get up and walk out if you tried that. You know, these guys, you go and you tee it up and you hit it, you find it, hit it again. It's that cold, and the U.S. played better.
Well, there was one match, though, that wasn't cold at all. There was one match that was red, red hot, and it was exciting to watch. That was Patrick Reed versus Rory McIlroy.
Nah.
Okay, that was screaming and shouting and roaring and yelling, okay? There was so much hollering going on, I thought for a minute I was watching a Godzilla movie. Okay, because here comes Rory McIlroy.
I guarantee you those two golfers were cold-hearted.
They may have been cold-hearted, but they were yelling like monsters in a Japanese monster movie, okay? Rory makes a putt. Okay, Reed makes a putt. Okay, Rodan, Mothra, Godzilla, Ghidra. Okay,
they're having a great time, and it's a lot of fun. I agree.
It was very exciting.
But that ain't the kind of golf that wins Ryder Cups, or for that matter, anything else. It's the guy that plays the coldest, I think, who's going to win.
Well, it's also the guys that putts the best, too. You know, usually the team wins. Teams that make the most putts.
You know, if you stand up to a putt, your heart is already beating, but you have got to calm yourself down. You almost got to go into cryogenics, for God's sakes. To just do this as coldly and as calculatingly as you can. You are a battlefield surgeon. As much emotion as you might be feeling, you have got to keep your hands steady because you're dealing with something very precious. And that's the way I feel about this game. And that's why I think the game is the hardest game to play. It is just the hardest game of all.
You know, if people think that Jack Nicklaus said after the decision came down in the Casey Martin case, he said, "I'll take those judges out to play a round of golf. We'll see how physical it is on you."
Oh, absolutely.
Even though you're not being tackled, even though you're not running around, you know, it is absolute because, you know, you'd spend so much time in your own head.
Jay, I spent a lot of time covering pro football and Major League Baseball and the college football. I know all about the heat in sports. I agree to all of that. I agree to the pressure of the crowd screaming and you need a first down or whatever. I understand all that. But remember, a golfer is on his own. This is for the benefit of anybody who thinks golfers are twits. A golfer is on his own. And he's on his own like a neurosurgeon for 4.5 to 5 hours. Just think of that pressure for that amount of time and trying to get a ball that's sitting still to do what you want it to do. You can't cut away from the ball like a football player and get the extra yard. You can't jam it like a basketball player. You have to hit it, and you have to hit it right. And you have to do it more often than the other guy. It is a very, very vicious sport to the individual.
Like microsurgery. It is a game of microns.
You're exactly right. It is. It is exactly that. That's why these guys, the tour's slogan is what? That these guys are really good? They certainly are. Guys you've never heard of are just great golfers. You just don't, you don't hear of them. They don't win because they're one or two shots off. But just because they're not getting beat up doesn't mean it isn't a hell of a hard game. It is the hardest game.
Yeah, and the difference between the top player and the 150th player in the world is microscopic well. And that's why so many players are, you know, rising and falling very quickly up and down the ranks.
I agree.
Go ahead. Tell us a few more players besides Dustin Johnson that really made an impression on you that you look towards in 2017 as having a good year.
I think the usual suspects. I'm looking for Rory McIlroy to forget being a jet setter or whatever mentality he's fallen into and making a comeback. I'm looking for Jordan Spieth to recover whatever was that magic that he had. And believe me, and you know as well as I do, and I hope your listeners do too, none of us can define this stuff. We can't figure it out. Nobody can. It's something in there. You know, fortunately in football and in baseball, basketball, all the action sports, you know, you're reacting to a lot of stuff. Not in golf. You're acting. The ball reacts. And you are faced with long periods of silence. You've got to be contemplative. What's this ball going to do? Or maybe you relieve the pressure the way Trevino did, chatting, whatever. But something happens out there, and nobody can define it. Nobody can quantify it. Nobody can measure it in any way. But something separates one guy from the next. And I don't know what it, I wish I knew what it was. I'd be very wealthy right now.
Well, you've seen a great deal, Marino. You've been doing this for so many decades so well. You're one of, you know, the true greats of sports writing, not just golf writing. You've covered the Steelers. You've covered the Pirates. So very quick. You're taking me out for a round of golf at an old stone wall or something. Very quickly, before we let you go, we're going to go through our football picks here on GNN. We had a very good week last week. We went 7 wins, no losses, and a tie.
Oh,
yeah. So we're going to give you 7-0-1, okay? The only tie was the Giants, unfortunately. And we're going to bet against the Giants again this week, okay? The first game is we're taking the Lions +10.5 visiting the Giants at Giants Stadium.
Jay, you're talking over my head right now. I don't even understand betting.
Okay, well...
The Giants are 10.5-point underdogs?
No, they're 10.5-point favorites in this particular bet.
Oh, okay. All right. I ain't going to bet anybody's 10.5-point favorites. Not in poker.
Okay. Then we've got the Packers visiting the Bears.
The Packers are going to win. I don't even know what the line is.
Well, we have to give a half a point. The Packers have to give a half a point.
Yeah,
but I think they beat the Bears outright. The Bears' defense isn't strong enough to stop
the
offense.
By a minimum of 3, probably 7 or 8.
And then the last game, okay, a bit of a weird one we picked. We took the Chiefs at home, giving a half a point to the Tennessee Titans.
I'd go for the Chiefs. I like the Chiefs.
It is an Arrowhead, and I think that Marcus Mariota is probably a year away, but watch out, that team is going to get good. So, and before we let you go, also one more. How about Pittsburgh and Cincinnati? What's your thoughts on the Steelers, who just took the lead in the division last week?
I haven't checked the line. I don't follow the line. What is the line on this game?
I played the over-under, actually, okay? I'm going over 36 combined points in this one.
That's good. Provided
so
the field is okay. I don't know what the weather's going to be.
Well, they're playing in Cincinnati.
The Steelers are going to win unless kills somebody, and the guy ought to be in jail anyway, but unless he kills somebody... the Steelers are going to win this game.
Well, hopefully they're going to use that as a springboard because they got the Ravens the week after and then close with the Browns. But
this is not a home team cheerleader, by the way. I'm amazed at what has become of the Steelers right now at the way they're playing. I'm really surprised, and especially Jay. That defensive backfield, I thought that was strictly garbage to start the year, but they're looking pretty
well. I don't think very much of it anyway, right yet. We'll find out for certain when Flacco comes to town and with Andy Dalton coming in as well. But the Steelers offense has been good, but we need some more help in the receiving corps, and I don't think Hilarious Green is the answer for a backup tight end.
Yeah, well, and when Dalton comes to town, by the way, the Steelers have a great chance as long as the defensive line knows enough to put up their arms, because Dalton doesn't know how to lob a pass over. He got knocked down, 3-4 times a week or so ago? I had to laugh all the way through it. He kept throwing flat passes, and the defense kept I forget who he was playing, kept slapping the ball down. And I said, who can't be?
Well, if you wanted flat passes, you should have seen what purported to be a football game last night between the Rams and the Seahawks. The Rams quarterback and punter were short-arming passes all day. Meanwhile, the Seahawks looked like the flying highlighter is in a chartreuse atrocity.
Yeah, I saw that. What was that outfit? they looked like road signs. I thought they were road signs.
They look like the flying highlighters, okay? I mean, I've used markers that look that color. And Marino, thank you for joining us on Jay's Plays. It's been a great segment having you. We love you. We can't wait to have you again in the spring come the Masters.
My pleasure, Jay. My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Everybody, you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. I'm Jay Flummel. We will be right back after these messages.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Play show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to them, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Plays show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.